Broadcasting now.
Thank you.
Let me find our attendees. We have one attendee, so I'll see if we have another.
Is that Cynthia?
Is Jada
Okay.
and Audrey have joined us now, and then a 971. So let's
Okay.
see.
Great.
I'll see if Cynthia comes on, and then if Cynthia just raises her hand, we'll be able to promote. Or we'll give her access to her microphone.
Okay. Well, we'll give it a second, and so I'll tell the few people that are on besides the CAC here and staff. Welcome back to a new fiscal year of the CAC. After August being dark, we're all getting used, I think, to a lot of these Zoom meetings and moving this stuff forward. So, looking forward to the rest of this year and next year as our second year for both Jane and I in being a chair and vice chair. Let's go ahead and do roll call,
Okay.
please.
Member Eldred?
Present.
Franck, sorry.
Present.
Sutter?
Present.
Thank you. You have three members. We do not have a quorum.
All right, so for those on the phone, oh, I see Ernie here.
Hello.
Thank you, Ernie. Please, for the record, Pacheco has arrived.
Okay, and so we are looking for two more CAC members before we have a quorum. We do have public comment at this point, and then what I want to do real quick is one announcement prior to public comment, and that is for Rick. Rick has been a member of the CAC for 2 years. He had a 2-year term. And last year, or last July, weren't quite sure about the timing of it all, so he didn't officially say goodbye at that point. He is joining us from Las Vegas in his mask, so he can officially say goodbye. Rick, we will miss you on the CAC, and hopefully, we may run into you in other endeavors since we're all in this kind of same area, so.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was a real pleasure to serve and be on the CAC and get to meet and spend time with all of you. And, I hope the urgency of our situation is obvious to everyone. I mean, actually in Las Vegas right now with my young kids fleeing the smoke from the Bay Area. So I think we all know how serious and important EBCE is in clean energy. So was, proud to serve for 2 years and I'm glad to be leaving it in such capable hands. And I'm obviously still going to be very happy to be involved in EBCE going forward in maybe some other capacity. So, yeah, excited. Thank you so much for letting me say goodbye. Unfortunately, not in person. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I kind of miss the Hayward City Hall. I can't, I
That
thought I
little
would
room
never
down in the
say
basement or in the
that.
corner. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, thank you so much. And please don't hesitate to, everyone has my email to reach out if you have questions or if there's things that I can do to help. And I will still remain a loyal EBCE supporter and customer. So thanks for letting me chime in from Vegas and good luck tonight.
Great. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
Rick, thank you.
See ya. All right. With that, let's go on to public comment. Do we actually have any speaker slips for this period? If anybody wants to talk to the CAC about anything that's not on our current agenda.
Yes, I currently have two speakers. Just a reminder for those calling in, it is #9 to raise your hand, and I will manage the microphone and let you mute yourself or unmute yourself. And if you're having difficulties locating the public speaker slip, it is on the main page as well as right above the agenda joining link for this meeting. Okay, so I have Barbara and Alita Dupree, and then call-in user has also raised their hand.
Okay, thank you. Barbara?
She's not using her name, so I'm going to unmute Audrey first. I'm not sure which one
Did
is
you say
Barbara.
Audrey? I thought you said Alita.
Oh, Alita? Okay,
You
there she
said
is.
Barbara, Alita, and then some
Audrey
call-in
has also
number.
signed up, but I'm not sure if call-in user one is Barbara.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'll start. So we'll start with Alita.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Mary Sutter and members. Alita Dupree, for the record, my pronouns are she and her. It's good to be back with you, getting involved with EBCE. I ask of you to be strong advocates in public power, because I am concerned about high electricity rates. And I'm not paying high electricity rates right now because due to COVID, I have not been able to come to Oakland. So I'm sitting here in Las Vegas, Nevada, with the air conditioner going. And I use 30 to 40 kilowatt hours a day. Right now, I'm only paying 4 cents. But I think about the delivery charges and how high they are. I conjecture that some of that is probably because of policies in California that seem to discourage the use of electricity. And so because of the tiered system, I conjecture that many replace electricity with fossil fuels. Therefore, they have two services going and paying fixed meter charges on both and not running a whole lot of units through either, which means that they're paying more per unit. So EBCE is working very, very hard to reduce the generation costs of electricity. And I appreciate that work. But I hope that you will all be able to be involved in the deeper conversations of things like rate making and design. And hopefully, perhaps, EBC becoming a municipal utility district. And so if we can encourage people to use more electricity by not using the fossil fuels, we can reduce the per unit overhead of electricity going forward, because electricity is basic and it should be affordable to everybody. I appreciate the work that you do as an agency. But our advocacy must be strong and forceful so we can hopefully eventually bring both sides of the business under the public transparent umbrella that is EBCE. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alita. The one response I'll make to you is just go ahead and do some Google searching on decarbonization. State of California is moving in that direction. And there are things in play that will hopefully bring that about. So who's next? Audrey or Barbara?
Hello. Yes, okay, great. Actually, I had signed up to speak to item 5. So, but I could give my comment now or it's up to you.
Let's be best to the item.
Okay, good.
Item 5.
Thank you.
And do we have
Barbara? Okay, call-in user. You can unmute yourself.
Hi, this is Cynthia Landry. Can I join the room, please?
Yes. Okay, perfect. Okay. Thank you, Cynthia.
Great. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was looking for the last 4 of your phone number, so this is perfect. Thank you. We'll just leave your phone as is. Okay. Next to speak, I have Barbara Stebbins. Hello, Barbara.
Is Barbara the call-in user, or was that Cynthia?
Yeah, that was Cynthia. No, I'm sorry.
Hi, Barbara.
Not the controls everywhere. I wanted to raise the issue about the Community Advisory Committee. We really have Local Clean Energy Alliance in particular. We're concerned that seated members at this point are down to 6. We should have 9 full-time members and 2 alternates, and there are no alternates. And I know from interacting with Stephanie that there are moves to try and address these issues, but I'd like to see the Community Advisory Committee also become more proactive in doing that. It seems to us that there should be a Community Advisory Committee member on any kind of committee that's reviewing applications and making decisions as well. So I'm just kind of bringing that to your attention and hoping that it could maybe become an agenda item in a future Community Advisory Committee meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Barbara. Do we have any other speaker slips for this period?
I have two more speakers.
For
public comment, I have Vaughn and Blair Beekman.
Okay.
I'm unmuting Vaughn now.
Vaughn, great, thank you.
Okay, Vaughn.
You can hear me now, right?
Yes.
Sorry, this is my first meeting. I'm actually in Pleasant, and I don't think we actually belong to the EBC.
You do.
Oh, you do.
Oh, you
do? Does. Yep, you're new. Welcome.
Nobody's asked me if I wanted to join or not, as far as the, opt-in or opt-out type of thing, so I didn't know which yet. Anyways, my question has probably nothing to do with this meeting.
Okay.
How would I contact somebody to find out if you have any long-duration storage planned or plans?
One of the things that I would suggest, are you planning to listen into the meeting today or the meeting on Wednesday?
No, it's my wife's birthday on Wednesday. I'm not going to test that one.
Okay. There are plans. You can, Nick, I saw you were on. Is there a person that Vaughn should get a hold of? My reason I'm saying Vaughn is the IRP just came out. They're going to talk about it today. There is long-term storage. EBC is putting in place and purchasing long-term storage. Some in Alameda, some outside of Alameda for RA purposes. So I guess
who's IRP? I'm sorry.
For resource adequacy purposes. So there is effort going on. I guess the question is, I'm going to kind of push it back to any of the staff that are on in terms of, is there a person that we can help Vaughn connect with?
Yeah.
Answer some of these questions.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. Vaughn, I think the best information we can share with you about long duration energy storage, so I presume you're talking about 8 hour plus energy storage.
Yeah, a couple weeks, months type thing. Long duration.
Yeah, a group of CCAs, including EBCE, put out a long duration storage request for information. So that's something you can learn more about.
Have we hired anybody yet?
What's that?
Have we hired anybody for that RFI yet?
Oh, no, it's just more information gathering. And then, our integrated resource plan, Vaughn. Vaughn, if you want to send your information to our clerk, we can share some of that information with you.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And that email is cob@ebce.org. And it's also on our webpage in the top of this agenda.
Okay, the one for sending the public comment to.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And I think we had something from Blair.
Yes, I'm meeting Blair now.
Hello, Blair here. Thank you. It's nice to be a part of this process again. I just spent the past month in San Jose. Each week I would mention that you guys have, three or four or five public meetings a month to work on local community issues. And thank you for that. San Jose, I felt it would be time to offer a little gossip about what San Jose is working on right now. They've been having on their city council agendas local community energy items for the past month, which I found interesting. So, I naturally bring up, your own work. And what interesting ties into, the comments of the last person, San Jose is building with PG&E a storage facility. They're going to convert a natural gas energy facility substation into a solar storage facility. and they're going to use natural gas to power it, I think, to help power it. And what you're talking about here, it's called the Hummingbird Energy Project, I think. And I just thought I would mention that here to kind of give a comparison of what San Jose is working on. And a previous caller had mentioned, you know, the good things we can work on at the EBCE, and I hope I myself can learn those things. And I thought of those, you know, carbon adjustment things that California could be really good at this year. And I'm trying to learn what exactly can be not just carbon reduction, but really good inventive renewable ideas and how we coordinate ourselves, you know, in what the previous speaker said, to really positive, sustainable thinking and ideas of renewable energy ideas and not just carbon reduction. And that's a, you know, it's fine lines to develop. And I hope you guys, I hope I can learn to do that. I hope you guys can better develop that yourselves. And as always, you know, I'm working on openness and accountability with technology issues for local communities. And I try to mention that here, you know, and whatever technology projects you will be doing, to have open public policy practices and to really work on those ideas, you know, that's just really good, sustainable, positive sustainability ideas for a community and really helpful, good democratic practices, you know, builds the ideas of peace, basically. So that's what I wanted to say this time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Blair. Do we have any other comments? Any other speaker slips? Stephanie, you're on mute.
Thank you. I've been calling Eddie Price. You're unmuted.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Eddie Price, and thank you for allowing me into the meeting. I'm currently the chair of the Community Advisory Committee for San Diego Community Power. Woo-hoo. So I'm just kind of going to sit in the background and listen and hope I can pick up some pointers on where we need to steer our community power, our community advisory group. And I, you know, I really like the involvement I'm hearing from the other speakers and the level of questions that detailed questions that are being answered. And that's our hope and my hope to get our community this involved in this San Diego Community Power down here. So that's all I want to say, just checking in. And if I had a way to leave my email address, I would, but if your chair or anybody on your group would like to contact me, I would greatly appreciate it.
So Eddie, yes. This is Mary. I'm the chair of the CAC this year, and I would be interested in talking to you. I already have a standing meeting about once a quarter with the Monterey Bay chair of the CAC. And the more the merrier. I mean, I find that those discussions help me think about things slightly differently because all these CACs are very different. So I would suggest if you send your contact information to the board or clerk of the board, COB at ebce.org, the thing that Stephanie was just telling you. Stephanie, please forward that to me and I'll be in touch with Eddie.
Sure, absolutely. And I also have it from the speaker form, so I can Great. Forward that to you.
Just forward it to me. And so Eddie doesn't need to do anything. Is that correct?
That is correct, Eddie. I will go ahead and
forward it. Oh, I like you guys even more now. Appreciate that. You got to do nothing.
No, we're an effective group.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. So I'll be in touch tomorrow, Eddie.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And we can figure out a time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And there are no more speakers. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So we're going to move on to item C3, which is the approval of minutes. And we do have a quorum now. So does anybody have anything on the minutes that need to be changed? Hearing none, I am going to say that we pass the approval of minutes, unless I hear from anybody, as written. I see a thumbs up. I don't see Anne Olivia or Ernie unblocking themselves.
Okay, but we will need to take a motion still. So I will have that as yes.
Sure.
The chair made the motion to approve.
So Anne Olivia moved. Who seconded? Cynthia? I think I heard Cynthia second. All right, roll call. Roll call vote.
Aye. Ernie, aye.
Okay, so Pacheco, aye. Thank you. Eldred?
Aye.
Landry?
Aye.
Franck?
Aye.
Sutter?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes with attendance.
Great. We're going to move on to the item C4, which is the chair report. I don't have a whole lot. I want to pick up on what Barbara was saying, is there is effort that is in the works right now to update some of the CAC appointee policy. You know, there is a policy in place, been slow in implementing, I understand that, but hopefully they'll have that discussion at the executive board meeting on the 25th. So if people are interested and they want and they can attend then, please do. My understanding is the policy update that they're working on is bringing in people from Tracy and the newer areas and how that's going to happen. And also there's a consideration for terms in terms of how long a term is. My understanding also is that the 8 years is not changing. It just may be that individual terms may change. I now see that Monica is here. So can the record note that Monica is now attending as well?
Thank you, it's noted.
So at some point we, you know, if they're gonna update the policy, the CAC is gonna hear of it. You know, it's gonna come back to us. As all of these things, we'll be able to weigh in whether or not the board chooses to take our recommendations is totally up to them. I will also note that the item that Barbara indicated is we have brought up recommendations to include a CAC member in the past, and it was not desired by the board. So that doesn't mean we can't recommend again, but I'm just telling you that's what's happening. There should be discussion on the 25th. It has not yet been agendized. On Wednesday, I'm going to try and push that they definitely talk about it on the 25th so we can get this thing moving. And that's my chair report. So let's move on to item.
Chair Sutter, ask a question, please? Regarding what you just said, last time we did have some input in that policy.
We did.
And I would like, before there's anything adopted or approved, if permissible, I would like that to return to the CAC committee and be, you know, agendized again before it moves forward, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I thought I said that. But yes, my assumption is before there's any updated policy, it will come back to the CAC.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Item C5 is Brilliant 100 Options for 2021. I think Annie is presenting to us on this.
Hi, good evening. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Stephanie. So I will walk through the presentation that we've prepared for the board. And if you have questions, maybe it's fairly quick, so I'll be able to take your questions at the end. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So just a quick background. I think those on the committee are familiar with this, but for members of the public who maybe haven't been following every meeting, the board did take certain actions regarding Brilliant 100 in June of this year, and this was along with our budget approval. So they decided that in 2020, the Brilliant 100 power mix would be at the RPS qualified renewables of 33%, and then 60% carbon-free, which would not include any nuclear based on the carbon-free allocation. Can you go back to the next slide? Thanks. From PG&E. And the 2020 cost would be at parity with PG&E's standard rates, which is as Brilliant 100 always has been since we launched. But since the Brilliant 100 cost to serve is greater than the current rate being charged to customers, we would be closing this rate to new customers or opt-ups. So it would just remain with the roughly 10% of customers who we were serving as of June. Next one, please. So I think I just spoke to all of these. So keep it at cost parity, not available for new accounts or opt-up, that the power content would be 33% in 2020. For the renewables and 35.8 in 2021. And then we said that we would come back and discuss this with the board in September. So that is what this presentation is intended to do. Next slide, please. So we have done quite a bit of analysis on the staff side, spoken with many of our government partners as well to understand sort of what their objectives are. Since we do have two jurisdictions who are defaulted onto the Brilliant 100 product, I will, you know, small asterisks in Piedmont, any CARE customer has been defaulted onto Brilliant 100, but it's a very small population. So, you know, really the big ones are Hayward and Albany. And so there's really two main options, and then the third option came into play based at the request of cities. And I do just want to pause to note here that what is being presented to the board is for discussion. It is not, I know here on your committee agenda, it's an action item, but for the board, it is a discussion item and it will come back again in October for them to vote. So again, the options, two major options are either we increase the cost of Brilliant 100 above the PG&E parity price, and we continue to offer it at 100% carbon free, but it's RPS and large hydro, but there wouldn't be any nuclear. In looking at this, there is a fairly, you know, we're presenting a fairly broad range of potential premiums. There's a number of reasons that there could be that kind of spread, and I'll speak to those in another slide. The alternative is to just simply close the product with the sort of starting point of anyone that's currently on Brilliant 100 would transition onto the Bright Choice product. And then, of course, Albany and Hayward would need to let us know what they wanted to do. We're not assuming that they would just simply go to Bright Choice. So what happened is that I think it was the late August, early September. Back in July, Hayward staff took an item to their city council saying, this is what EBCE has voted on in June. They're going to maybe shut down this product. This really important for a climate action plan that we continue to have a carbon-free option that does not cost more than PG&E. So the city of Hayward has sent us a letter to the EBCE staff and board requesting that the board consider a third option. And that third option would remain 100% carbon-free at cost parity, and we would be able to do this financially by accepting a nuclear power allocation from PG&E, which the board had previously in April rejected for the year of 2020. This would be for 2021. I will note that earlier this afternoon, it was dated September 10th, but I just got it this afternoon. We got a similar letter from the city of Pleasanton. So for Vaughn, if you're still on the line, Pleasanton requested this same thing, not necessarily that they would default onto this product, this third option, but that they wanted it to remain a consideration of the board. So let's go to the next slide, please. So City of Pleasanton, is highlighted because at the time we weren't quite sure, but we did in fact receive that formal request as of today. The 2020 carbon-free allocation is a little bit up in the air. So just at the end of August, PG&E submitted an advice letter to the PUC asking the PUC if they could actually make this carbon-free offer to primarily the CCAs. And similar to the last year, it would be both for nuclear and large hydro. And each entity who receives that offer can select if they want one or both. But it wasn't slated to actually be an offer in 2021. The regulatory process right now has gone into something called Working Group 3. And there are others in our organization who could speak more to exactly what is happening there. But this sort of surprised us in some ways that PG&E proactively asked if they could make these allocations for these interim years before Working Group 3 was, they were targeting 2024, which is, of course, the first year that the nuclear plant starts to go offline. I believe one reactor is in 2024 and the other is in 2025. So in this letter that PG&E sent to the Public Utilities Commission, they requested that a decision be made by October 31st. So unfortunately, we're still, even if the board is able to vote in October, we're still not going to have full clarity on whether or not this is even, you know, having some product with nuclear in it. We're not quite sure if that's even something that could happen. I will note that the advice letter did not include any information about, you know, how many, you know, megawatt hours or gigawatt hours the allocation would be to EBCE and how much of that would be nuclear versus hydro. We have no sense of that yet. And then just a quick reminder around the carbon-free allocation is that the board did have a split vote in April of 2020, and the decision was to only accept the large hydro allocation. Next slide, please. So I wanted to provide, I'm not going to walk through all of this. This is really for reference and to stimulate conversation. But what it looks like if Brilliant 100 is offered at 5%, the next slide is at 2%, and then a later slide is sort of just looking at Bright Choice and Renewable 100. Because we often get questions, well, what is that additional cost? What is it compared to sort of the same customer if they're on Renewable 100? And so I tried to lay out this information here. Again, our Bright Choice product is at a 1% discount. The Brilliant 100 column here represents PG&E plus 5%, and that's PG&E's current rates, just to note, because, of course, PG&E changes their rates normally on an annual basis, so by the time we implement this, PG&E's rates might be a little different. And then Renewable 100 has been maintained and will continue to be one penny above PG&E per kilowatt hour. So I think I just want to point out again sort of what these last rightmost four columns, because I think this is where we often get a lot of questions. How much more is Brilliant 100 than PG&E, or would it be? And then how does that compare to Renewable 100? So I tried to show that on a monthly basis, and then sort of the monthly as well as annual differential between these two sort of, you know, above baseline products. And we're showing this for a residential, a small commercial, and a large commercial customer because, of course, you know, this is fairly small on the residential side, but as you get into your larger customers, it starts to have a more significant impact. Next slide, please. So some of the reasons for the premium range is that we don't know. PG&E provides sort of incremental forecasts. The next forecast, I believe, we get in November 2020. But the rates are never final until, in theory, December 31st. And, you know, in the last couple of years, I don't think since we've launched EBCE, has there actually been a PG&E rate change that has occurred on the normal cadence of a January 1 update. They've been delayed fairly significantly for the last couple of years. And so without knowing that, it's hard to say how we peg a premium. So if so we know what our costs are, that we're certain of. But if we're pegging that, you know, we're sort of communicating it out as a premium above PG&E, if their rates are higher, then maybe the premium's only 2%, but if the rates are lower, it could be as high as 5%. And that's why we're presenting this as a range, because we just don't have all the info we would need to really dial that in. There's also uncertainty about this carbon-free allocation. So not just take nuclear off the table completely, because that wouldn't necessarily be part of Brilliant 100 if we offered it at a premium, right? But the large hydro allocation, depending on how much we get from PG&E, that impacts the cost to serve the Brilliant 100 population. I do want to know, it's not stated here in any of the slides, but I do just want to call out that I did ask our power resources group to do sort of a sensitivity analysis, because I personally wasn't certain if it made a difference. Like, what if Hayward decides we can't ask our customer, you know, our local residents to pay a premium, and so the only ones sort of left on Brilliant 100 are those who voluntarily opted up, which is a fairly small amount, and Albany, which is also a fairly small jurisdiction. You know, does that mean that the premium would be higher because you don't have economies of scale? And what it came out to is not really. Based on the scale that we're looking at, it's, you know, irregardless of the number of the size of the load based on what we currently serve under Brilliant 100, if it's 10% or if it's 90%, our costs are still within roughly the same ballpark, enough so that that shouldn't really be like a determining factor when we offer up this premium. Next slide, please. I think we did miss a slide in here with the 2% numbers, but that's okay. It's for comparison's sake, but Stephanie, I will check in with you to make sure that what is presented, posted online, in fact, has that slide. So here we just have comparing, let's say that Brilliant 100 is just shut down. That's the decision made by the board, is just to no longer offer that product, so that we basically have a baseline and 100% product. That's it, 100% renewables product. So then what does that cost differential look like? People often ask about this, so I wanted to present those numbers as well. Next slide, please. So the timeline, the board will discuss these Brilliant 100 options for 2021 at the next meeting on Wednesday. In October, we have been, Alex DiGiorgio, my colleague, and I have been talking with a number of different local staff agencies, as well as more involved conversations specifically with Albany and Hayward, but we are trying to support those local governments in bringing this discussion to their council, and in some cases they want it to go to like a sustainability committee before the city council, because they take that committee's recommendation to the council. So we are looking to them to make that decision, you know, to go through that process in October, basically starting to have that conversation about what they want to do. The board will vote on the products, potentially the pricing. Still, that's something that we are still working out, whether or not we'll have enough visibility into what PG&E's rates will be, if we'll be able to actually bring forward the precise premium in October. And it is also possible that the board will vote on the default products for Hayward and Albany in October. Now, it's slightly odd because, you know, Hayward's going to say we want to have this third option and the board hasn't even voted on it yet. But what I'm expecting city staff to do is basically say sort of choice one, choice two, based on a board decision. And city staff has asked for us to take their request in October rather than November, because they wanted greater time to do outreach to local residents in their communities. So then in November, we would have the final decisions from the local jurisdictions, because now they will have some certainty over which products are going to be offered in 2021. We'll, as staff, present what our outreach plan is, if one is necessary. In December, the board will vote on approving whatever the city's request. So if a third product is offered, for example, and Berkeley says we don't want that as a product offering in our jurisdiction, and they've gone to council and made that formal request, in December we would be bringing that to the board and the board would be voting on that, basically stating which products are available in which jurisdictions. And then in January of 2021, we would be implementing whatever those decisions are that come out of this process. So that is the last slide, and I'm going to pause for questions.
Thank
or
you,
is Annie. It public comment? Okay.
Yep. Thank you, Annie. I'm going to put it to the public first. And given our timing on this, I want to limit to 2 minutes on public. If I know that we at least had Barbara was going to talk to this one. I don't know if we have anybody else. Stephanie.
Yes, and I also noticed that Blair Beekman wanted to speak to item 4.
You need to speak up a little bit. We can barely hear you.
Okay, how about this?
Better.
There we go. So I do realize that I also missed Blair Beekman for item 4. If you would still like to speak to this item.
Okay, well, does he have something for C5 as well?
I do not have comments for C5 for him.
Let's come back.
Actually, yes, Blair did sign up for C5. Okay. So we'll go ahead and unmute Tom Kelly first.
Tom, okay, great, thank you. He's not unmuted yet. There you go, Tom.
There you go, Tom.
Is that good?
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot here, and trying to cover it in 2 minutes is kind of difficult, but let me just do some bullet points, and that is that, first of all, PG&E's default product in 2019 was carbon-free. And its solar choice program, which was the 100% renewable, is actually cheaper than Bright Choice. So for a city whose, you know, all their budgets are actually really kind of stressed, the most reasonable thing for them to do would be to switch their municipal accounts to PG&E Solar Choice so that they both save some money and also reduce their carbon emissions associated with the electricity provided to their municipal accounts. Now, they couldn't do that for their residents and commercial customers. But you can see the dilemma here, right? I mean, if we're concerned about climate change, we've got to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And EVCE's proposals, both with its default product, Bright Choice, well, I'll say just in terms of Bright Choice, they're actually taking a step backward. It was about 60% renewable and 85% carbon free in 2019, but it's board approved power mix for 2020 is actually less than that. So, you know, what's important here? Carbon emissions or some kind of fix that includes nuclear power? I say I don't have time to get into that, but we rejected nuclear power. And to come back with it now is kind of an affront to all of us who established this program. So I'll let it go there, but there's a lot more to this that I think we're missing here. Thank you.
Great, thank you. We are gonna have more than one time to talk about this. This isn't the only time, but I was hoping to use our period of CAC to provide any initial advice to the board, which is why it's an action item for us, even though it's not an action item for the board. Next.
I have speaker. Blair Beekman.
Great. And Blair, if you want to say something about C4, which was the chair report as well, please do.
Thank you. It would only take me less than a minute, and then I can speak on item C5, if that's okay. And I've got a full 2 minutes for that. Sure. For item C4, I just simply wanted to offer that I had an additional idea that I didn't mention in public comment. The person, Vaughn, he was asking questions about storage. And that, interestingly, was on your agenda minutes for the month of July, I think. You know, EBCE is working on, microgrid individual power storage packs for homes. And I think that was an agenda item back in July. And I think that was maybe mentioned to Vaughn. It should be mentioned to him about choices of storage. It's individual. And I also wanted to mention that should agenda items be itemized? Should that be a part of public comment? Does that fall under Brown Act rules that there should be public comment allowed for agenda minutes of previous agendas? Okay, that all said, about C5. You know, the previous speaker, I think, just offered something really nice. And, you know, for me, it's really difficult to, I can offer some beginner's ideas and words about, let's stay away from nuclear at all costs, and that nuclear power and that corporate line of thinking is creates serious problems for ourselves. you know, but it gets hard to decide then, you know, what exactly, how do we go about the process? It sounds like you have some pretty set plans if by October you want things to be getting going and by mid-October. So I hope this next month can really be open to people to hear ideas and options. And like what you said, this is only a beginning. Do that. And this is going to be an important month that, you know, I don't know the ways to go. But if you consider what is most, the ideas of positive sustainability and how to address what COVID was working towards and trying to accomplish, and how do we recreate the world of COVID and its thinking into a new world of positive, more genuine, positive sustainability ideas. I hope that can help set a few ideas on how we can move forward at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Blair. Who's next? Stephanie, you're on mute.
Barbara Stebbins.
Great, thank you.
I'm here.
Hi, Barbara.
You all hear me. Of course, this is this item and the possibility of, once again, EBCE accepting an allotment of nuclear is pretty upsetting to those of us who went out to our community. We informed them of what might be happening. We got a huge response in support of our position that EBCE should not accept nuclear. And the idea that now individual cities could accept an allotment is one more step into the really the unreal situation that happens when power is only remote and it's all an accounting mechanism. And really what will really show that is that the nuclear will be on EBCE's power content label, I assume. I don't see how you could differentiate in the power content label so that it only showed up in the cities of Hayward and any others that were to accept that allotment. So it would basically be EBCE going against a decision of the board already, going against the policy of the Community Advisory Committee, going against the 64, I think it was, people who showed up on a virtual meeting to express how much they did not want nuclear to be part of this agency, that would go against what the steering committee said so long ago and what was assumed by staff way back when they were first setting the power, what was going to be the power mix and the rates. So I certainly hope the board will see this for what it is, which is really, I mean, I feel for Hayward. On the other hand, their residents will all get a 1% rate cut if Brilliant 100 goes away. So that would be my suggestion, and I hope that's what will happen. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Barbara. Do we have anybody else?
Yes, Audrey, you're unmuted.
Great.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. It's what a old familiar topic this is. I just wanted to point out that accepting the nuclear allotment by anyone would help to lock in the PCIA, which I think everybody agrees is at the root of all the budget and rate pressures on all of the CCAs. And I understand that several new CCAs have postponed launch because of the PCIA. So, you know, we can cover this same ground again, but, you know, that's another and very important sort of long-term reason to not bring, not let Hayward choose this alternative. I wanted to suggest that maybe Hayward can consider defaulting to Bright Choice, as Barbara pointed out, enjoy a 1% discount and promote Renewable 100 as a way to support the city's climate goals. I think that would be maybe an alternative that might fly. And finally, in these fractious times, budgetary, you know, and otherwise, unity is a good thing. I think if EBCE remains, you know, solidly, we want to consider everyone who's a member, of course, but unity is a good thing. Especially if the composition of the board itself is liable to change. I understand that board members are sort of might be leaving and new ones coming on board. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Audrey. Do we have any more public speakers?
Yes, I have unmuted Jessica Thawad.
Great, thank you. Jessica?
Hi, everyone. You know, one of the things I want to add that hasn't been said is to reiterate that nuclear energy is not a solution to climate change. If anything, it's a false solution. And that really has been emphasized by the environmental justice and climate justice community. The other thing is any form of energy that actually exacerbates environmental racism and injustice is not a solution for our communities. This does not create more jobs in the community. This does not build the clean energy infrastructure and local build out that East Bay Community Energy promised it, the community when starting the program. This really feels like a bait and switch. I think the idea of actually going to Bright Choice, giving customers that 1% discount and emphasizing a opt-up campaign into Renewable 100, which is true clean energy investments offered by East Bay Community Energy. Those two options are great on their own. Having nuclear in a clean energy program makes absolutely no sense. And to support PG&E in offloading some of that nuclear energy is actually just really not wise from a community choice program, knowing very well that PG&E is setting up community choice to fail, especially and very easily with nuclear energy. That's all I want to say.
Thank you. Vaughn, you are unmuted.
Yeah, go over what somebody else referred to as about the battery packs. Battery packs are not a solution for long-term. It's not even long-duration storage. Long-duration is multiple days or weeks or even months. Battery packs are a couple hours with the caveat that there's currently not enough known lithium reserves in the world to provide the batteries for transportation, let alone anything else. So that's a dead end. It's a technologically, and for the world famous battery salesman, it's profitable, but it's not really a solution to the problems any more than nuclear is. Nuclear is the camel's nose underneath the tent, trying to keep the nuclear physicist employed for the next 50 years after 70 years of subsidies. That's not a way to go too. That's not going to get us where we want to go. We need long-term, long duration storage, and we have to be a lot smarter than the people that are pushing this other stuff, or we're going to fail. Thank you.
Thank you. Alita Dupree, your microphone is unmuted.
Thank you, Chair Sutter and members. Alita Dupree for the record. This is complicated, and certainly I think we need to, we got to reset the clock here. Certainly we need to have some rate simplification. I mean, we don't want to have rates that lose money, because then other customers and other rate classes are subsidizing that. And I am concerned about the brand, and this issue of nuclear and hydro allocations is going to continue to come up as long as those resolutions correspond to finite time periods. And our brand, if we accept nuclear, I am very sure it's going to show up on the power content label.
even if it's specific to some jurisdictions. And my hope is for nuclear power plant retirements, just as we are retiring coal-fired power plants. Power plant retirements come from when nobody wants to buy the electricity. And so I think one way to accelerate nuclear power plant retirement is for purchasers of power to not buy nuclear, and then it becomes harder to sell into the market. So this is going to come up, and I'm not going to go into all the details about why nuclear, why not nuclear. It's been bounced around plenty. But certainly we have to keep a value proposition, because if all of our rates are higher than PG&E, we risk losing people back to PG&E. And that could undermine the work of what EBC is all about. So I say keep a value proposition that meets RPS standards without nuclear and promote 100% renewable. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no more speakers for this item.
Great. I need to, once again, now that I'm doing this, figure out how to see raised hands.
If you click on the participants.
Yep.
Panelist tab, and then you should see the blue hand. Ernie has his hand and Monica has her hand up.
And I have my hand up also.
And Cynthia as well.
Okay, so I'm going to go Ernie, Monica, and then Cynthia, and then I'll figure out how to show it. Oh, I see it now. Okay, so Ernie, please go.
Sure. First, I want to say I agree with all of the expressions by the public against us accepting nuclear for any of our products. I'm in agreement. And also, while Annie did say this, it might have been hard to follow for people that aren't following Hayward politics. It is true that the original impetus to this was a letter from the city of Hayward. I have reviewed the Hayward documents and watched the Hayward meetings where this was discussed. I just want to make sure there's an understanding. This is not the city of Hayward saying that this is what they want to do. There was a lot of discussion. What happened was the city of Hayward council, after much discussion, said, go ahead, Al, and ask for this to be discussed. So this is not, that third option, including nuclear, is not an actual request from any city. It was just something that they wanted to actually be discussed to suss out later. I'll say that I am a Hayward resident. I and a lot of other Hayward residents will make sure that the city council would not accept this option if it gets to that point. I don't want to see it get to even to the point where they're voting on this option as a viable choice. Putting all my cards on the table during the formation committee, I was the first person that spoke out. I mean, we had a secret vote, but I spoke out publicly saying I did not want to see nuclear as part of EBCE's portfolio. Got some grief from that from my friends in labor. That said, when PG&E made this proffer originally, I was agnostic because let's see the details, and this is all bureaucratic, in large part bureaucratic paper trading. Let's look. After reviewing it, came out firmly against. Nothing has changed, in my opinion, that we should accept this. The damage that accepting nuclear would do to this agency would be significant. There are other paths forward that the agency and the cities can do to address what the underlying problem is identified by the city of Hayward, is that they've chosen Brilliant 100, trying to be more responsible and take a bigger bite out of their carbon footprint. But because the PCIA went up so significantly, it's now no longer a financially viable option unless it's sold at a premium. I would be interested. So first of all, I am firmly against this third option being considered, and I hope that the CAC, after discussion, will send that message to the board that we don't even think that this should be a third option. But there are other options. One would be, instead of just closing the product, which that is also another viable option, would be what if Brilliant 100 was offered at parity to PG&E? It would still allow us to have a higher degree of renewables, less so, I guess 60% less so, just off the top of my head. But it would still offer us to allow us to have more renewables. So I would be interested in seeing what the product would look like, greenhouse gas emission wise, at parity with PG&E, and that being offered to the cities that don't want their citizens to pay a premium, but do want a greater greenhouse gas reduction than is offered by Brilliant 100. And I'll stop there.
Great, thanks, Ernie. I have that down. I'd like to hear from everybody else. So I think Monica, you were next.
I actually have some questions for staff, if that's okay. So Annie or whoever can answer the question. My first question is, when the EBCE board approved the decision to not receive the nuclear allocation, was it simply for 2020 or was it indefinitely?
It was for 2020.
So the question still remains on what to do beyond 2020. That's still a kind of a policy question that the board has to face.
That is still a question for the board to make a decision about, yes.
Okay, and then the second question, this goes to a comment that one of the speakers made, that if you were to offer this special product for the cities of Hayward, Albany, and perhaps Pleasanton, that and which included nuclear in their content, that would have to show up on the power content label. Is it not correct though that you have a label for each individual product, and so you can in fact distinguish from one product versus another? So your standard product, your Bright Choice or whatever it's called, would not have nuclear. It would be this special product that has nuclear in it. Yeah, okay, thank you. I see you're nodding your head, so I'm gonna assume that means yes. And then—
Yeah, that's correct.
My other question goes to the JPA. I know, and I don't remember how this works exactly, but individual member cities have the ability to opt out of the JPA, is that correct? Like if Hayward or Albany felt like their needs weren't being met because we could not provide them a carbon-free product at a cost that was reasonable to them, could they not go back to PG&E, who in fact has a carbon-free product as of today, that would be essentially cheaper than what they could get from EBCE?
So you cannot have a community-wide opt-out without the reconciliation of the mark-to-market of all of our existing contracts.
Oh, so you have an exit fee for
of sorts. There is for jurisdiction-wide opt-out. Obviously, individual customers can, or municipalities can. I'll note that the PG&E rate is 100% carbon-free, but with 40% of the power mix is
44.
So, I think what my understanding of what Hayward is asking for is basically parity with what PG&E is offering.
Parity in terms of rate.
The power content and cost.
Okay, so they want 40% nuclear.
No, I mean, my point is it's not a specific percentage. Parity, and they're willing to accept nuclear, some percentage nuclear until it gets to zero carbon. It could be less, it could be more.
And it's for all of Hayward, not just the municipal load of Hayward. It's for the whole community.
It would be for any Brilliant 100 customer in Hayward.
Okay. All right. I guess those are my only questions. In terms of my comments, I certainly support the ability for any customer, including member cities, to exercise their voice and make their choice about what they want their power content to look like. A carbon-free product with nuclear, I know, would be a lot cheaper than a Brilliant 100 with 100% renewable. And they both get to the same place in terms of carbon content. And so I would hope that we as an advisory group would at least allow for the discussion to happen, or promote, or at least encourage the discussion to happen at the board level, and provide all the options and the merits of all the options, and let the board make the decision on what options they should provide or not provide. That's all I have.
Thank you, Monica. Cynthia, and then Aunt Olivia.
Yes, I have
wait a minute. Oh, God. Hold on a minute. Okay, I have several comments. The first one is the agenda shows this item as an action item, but when you go to the document, it says it's an informational item. And actually, the updated one that was sent out earlier shows this as an informational item. So, and it doesn't appear to me that there's any urgency right now to make a decision, since the rates and the amount of energy available is unknown. So can this be an informational item, or does it have to be a action item?
So Cynthia, it doesn't have to be an action item for the CAC. It is always has been an informational item for the board. They are not voting on this on Wednesday. For us, our action items can be slightly different. Our action is we want to tell the board as a CAC something. We want to provide advice. To me, that's what we are doing as the CAC. So that's why I felt that this group would probably want to provide a comment back. And that's why it's an advice for us, not for the board. I mean, it's an action item for us, not the board.
Okay, but we can always make further comments next month, since the actual board is not making any decision.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Okay. So then I have a couple of things. One, I am against option three. I am against the inclusion of nuclear energy. Has some of the public has mentioned, yes, we had over 60 speakers come out, and most of the speakers were against nuclear energy. I think very few speakers were for nuclear energy. The board vote was 10 to 5. So there was a number of entities that were opposed to nuclear. And it appears that we are revisiting this item again in 2020 when a decision has been already made. So procedurally, I have some issues about that, because the decision, was made. I'm going to have to go back and look at the actual motion. I know it's been said it was only for 1 year, but I'm not. I want to see the actual language in the motion, unless Adrian and Stephanie can send that to me now, or if they're able to, but probably not. But I don't think we should be revisiting this again in 2020. Both the board and the public has spoken out against nuclear energy. I am a delegate to the Central Labor Council. I'm also on the Alameda Environmental Justice Caucus. SEIU represents more than 15,000 households in Alameda County, including members in Hayward. And SEIU Local 1021 is opposed to the inclusion of nuclear energy. And the Alameda Labor Council Environmental Justice Caucus is also opposed to nuclear and energy. So see if there's anything else I want to say about this. I think if we want to revisit it, the time would be January 2021, but not now. And let's see.
Lastly, in terms of the rate, I don't know how feasible it is to keep Brilliant 100. And maybe I can ask the staff a question. Is Brilliant 100 scheduled to end 2020, or is it just that we're not accepting new folks into Brilliant 100? If you could clarify that, please. Sure.
Yeah, so the board made the decision in June to not add any new customers beginning July 1, and then to cease to offer Brilliant 100 as a 100% non-nuclear carbon-free product at rate parity with PG&E starting January 1, 2021.
And what would be the cost increase if, you know, Hayward and or Albany wanted to continue? Is it a big rating? I mean, I know you had charts there, but what's the percentage, approximately?
Approximately 2-5%.
Yeah. Well, then the jurisdiction has to make a decision whether it is financially feasible for them to continue in Brilliant 100 and or perhaps to opt down to Bright Choice, which has previously been mentioned, is offered at 1.5% cheaper. That's a financial decision that the entities, you know, should make. But not, I don't think that leads to us reversing our decision on nuclear and energy.
Thank you, Cynthia. Aunt Olivia?
Thank you. Let's see. I think I have enough internet to do this right now. So first, I would really like to thank staff for the presentation. Annie, that was really clear and as like thorough and simple a layout as you could hope to have for something that can be a pretty confusing topic. I also want to recognize the number of staff that we have joined us, that have joined us for this call. It's an important discussion. It's really cool to have this wealth of knowledge here and the level of engagement of our public, like our visiting chair, it's a pleasure to have you here, said, we have a massive level of public engagement, and it means a lot that the force of the community that built this agency has stuck with us through everything, and so we're going to need you all during this time. While I have been quite vocal in opposition to the presentation of information that was confusing to the board or the general public, I, like Member Pacheco, was also neutral on this issue when it came up, asking for more information and seeking details, and have been opposed, after reviewing the information, was opposed to the terms and grounds for this offer. But this one is a little bit different. And so I do want to ask clarification from staff. It might be Annie, it might be somebody else here. But just to clarify a question that was brought up by a member of the public and then Monica, if Hayward takes, say everything goes through and Hayward opts to have nuclear power, will that show up on our power content label for any person in Oakland or in Berkeley?
So the simple way to answer that is the power content label would show all of the products that we offer. So right now, people in Oakland also see Renewable 100. But that's not their product either. So the power content label would list whatever products we offered for that previous year. With the power content label, we have greater ability to make it into a marketing piece. The joint rate mailer that just went out, and hopefully everyone who's our customer saw that and looked at it, That is a template that's pretty locked down. We can't make changes. The power content label, we can have additional content. So if what the scenario you're describing were to happen, we would have additional content that said, this product is offered only in, hey, we're, you know, X, Y, and Z, while the rest of our communities are served by Bright Choice and Renewable 100.
But some, like the folks in Berkeley will still see the word nuclear on the thing that arrives at their door. Even my roommates, as active as I am, don't really have a clue how most of this work, and they look at it, and I always just say, what do you think that says? Because I'd like to know what they think that says. And as I've been getting farther into, I can't believe how far I've gotten in this law school thing. It's pretty amazing. I'm getting close to done. And we're really looking at energy and how, like, conveyance of information to the public goes. Like, we're going for not the deepest understanding, right? So will the word nuclear show up on the power content label in Berkeley?
It always does.
It does.
Because it's okay. A line item.
Great.
So I just, even if we don't offer it, it's there because PG&E has a number to fill in there. Or the state of California is actually power content label is us versus California. Joint rate mailer is us versus PG&E.
Right. But ours will have something next to the word nuclear.
For that particular product.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I'm not being the question that I'm asking is, will a person in Berkeley on the mm-hmm. power content label, will they just receive the thing that says, this is yours? Or will they receive something that has all the products we offer on it? Therefore, the customers in Berkeley will still see the word nuclear on their power content label, even if that's not the product that they're getting.
So for the joint rate mailer, mm-hmm. we have the ability to tune it to just the products that are available. So you could have a Berkeley resident could have a joint rate mailer that just says Brilliant One, Bright Choice and Renewable 100. And neither of those products have nuclear in it. Mm-hmm. But on the power content label, you have to list all the products that are available to your customers across your service territory.
Okay, so the word nuclear will show up in Berkeley even if that product isn't available to them.
Not on your joint rate mailer.
No, but on the power content label.
Your power content label has every product you offer to all your customers.
So in Berkeley, they will see the word nuclear. That's what I was just trying to clarify, because what Monica said made it sound like in Berkeley, they wouldn't see that. And what I heard from the caller is that they were concerned they would. So I just wanted to see which was correct because I didn't know the answer. So it sounds like the joint mailer, they will not see it if the product isn't being offered to them, but the power content label will list all of our products, therefore include nuclear since it could be included in one of our products.
But if you are a Berkeley resident, you would likely have an indication saying that this rate is not available to you.
Sure, I just wanted to see if it would mm-hmm. be there. Like this is clarifying.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is way down in the weeds, but the power content label is kind of like a nutritional label. So even things that don't have sugar, you still have the line for sugar.
Sure. But ours
so
would have
even if we don't take that third option. Yes, our nuclear row would have a zero, and the state of California, I don't know what it is for the state, but would have some percentage on the power content label.
Unless we took it and then it would have something for that product.
Correct.
Great.
Correct.
That's just what I wanted to hear, because it was, I felt like it wasn't clear. And I hear from a lot of those folks. So, and then there was another clarification where it says that we don't actually know the size of the allotment that's going to be offered, correct? So I'm just curious, is there something, because I haven't read it yet. I'm sorry, I'm usually so good about this, but I have not read anything on this. Do we know that we would be able to limit it? Like the number of accounts that you're talking about is not huge, right? So do you know that we'd be able to limit the amount of nuclear energy that we got to just the difference between our carbon-free purchases and whatever we needed to get to 100% for the number of customers that were requesting it. Like, could we say, no, we mm-hmm. only want this amount, we don't want the whole thing that you're giving? Or would it be like last time where we just got whatever they gave us? So we could accidentally end up with more nuclear power than just the difference between what we're already purchasing. I know we could purchase less and therefore have a higher nuclear content, but is there a way to limit the amount to just be the makeup between what we have in Bright Choice and getting to 100?
We can effectively sell any excess nuclear allocation beyond what we would forecast for the city of Hayward, the city of Albany, and any residual accounts.
Do you have a market for nuclear?
Yes.
Where?
Among other power marketing and load serving entities.
Like, this is inconsistent with information that was presented before. So that's exciting.
That's not inconsistent with the information we provided before. We have indicated that there is the ability to resell this product. It's a matter of what price others are willing to pay. But indicated that there's ability to resell it.
So we could resell the product, but we don't know what price they'd be willing to pay for it.
So, correct. At what price they're willing to, you know, take it? There's a price point at which other entities in the market would take the excess. Yes.
Okay. But there wouldn't be a way for us to limit the amount of power that we got. It would just be whatever the allocation is.
Correct. You get your percentage allocation from PG&E, and then you would have to remarket the excess.
And we don't know what that percentage is. So that also means we don't know what the cost savings would be yet.
We have a fairly accurate view of what the forecast is going to be, and those are the subjects to the terms of the acceptance. So you have a pretty good sense of how much allocation you're going to get. Then the question is what the load of the customers is going to be. You know, you can forecast that within a margin of error, and then mm-hmm. you manage your portfolio within that margin of error to achieve, you know, the highest probability of no excess. And so it is very much a solvable
cool.
challenge.
I would also say
that Hayward is a substantial load. I mean, if it were only Albany, that would be an issue. But with Hayward, I think, you know, if we got a similar allocation to what we received last year, I think, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically you'd fill up all that carbon-free portion with nuclear rather than large hydro. Because that is a fairly sizable load in for the city.
Again, it is a large load, but the point I'm making is that these are forecastable and knowable quantities, sufficiently knowable quantities as to be able to ensure that only customers in those opted-in cities would see nuclear.
Okay, so just to clarify, to make sure I'm clear, that we don't know the size, like it said on the side, but you do have a projection. And you could just fill Hayward up with nuclear power for the label and not put it on anybody else's, and be able to sell the excess at some price, but we don't know what that price is. Is that an accurate summary from what I'm hearing?
I think that's an accurate sort of rephrasing of the information. I will say we have not really embedded any incremental revenue from the sale of nuclear in any of our financial forecasts or in the pricing of Brilliant 100. So, you know, in principle, you could sell it for $0 and you're not financially worse off.
Right. Okay. The allocation portion. And then just knowing what y'all have been thinking about, like, it kind of looks like crazy apocalypse land out there, and people are not very happy right now. Like, it's terrifying and weird. And I'm hearing a lot more calls for local resiliency efforts. I'm just going to throw some mad love in JP's direction right now and be like, there's some really cool programs that are coming out. Have you all thought through the concept of offering a different product, something that was like, we're going to offer something at cost parity to PG&E, because that's a real concern. Like, they've been doing cost parity. That those were large numbers for the big customers, and that has to be addressed. So have you looked at something like, instead of it being carbon-free for your city, which according to the slides actually increased the overall amount of greenhouse gas emissions statewide, not just for in ours. We technically on paper, like Al said, they met their climate goals with the swipe of a pen, but it didn't actually do anything towards real emission rates. What would it look like to do something like a local product so that instead of already being at 100%, if you invest in this product, what we're doing is investing in local resiliency or something like that. I just think that there are more options on the table that are being presented. And Vaughn, if you're still listening, I would love to talk with you about long-term storage. It's fascinating. And our chair can connect you with my email address if that's an interest. But have you all looked at having an alternative than nuclear or no nuclear?
So one of the things that I'm going to step in here, it's 7:30. We have a half an hour left. We have two other items that we're going to be more than a half an hour total. So I think that the idea of a new product is one that I would love to hear a yes or no on whether it's been considered, but I don't want to talk about what a new one could be at this point. Yeah,
no, I want to know what they're looking at as alternatives. This is a really big deal. And
let me ask right away. Nick, are you guys looking at other products?
Yes.
Okay.
Great. I look forward to hearing about it. So, thank you. That was the extent of my questions.
Thank you. Jane and then Monica.
Yeah,
and
I have my hand up also.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Mary. I'll be brief here. Thank you, CEBCE staff, for presenting this to us and all of the, I think it's a dynamic and shifting environment right now in so many different ways. And I just want to, I want to first of all say that, I agree with the community's concern around nuclear and share the opposition to nuclear. I also, within that, I think we have to deal with the reality that these municipalities are going into a contracted financial, climate here that may extend for some period of time. And I'm not that comfortable with putting them in a position of having to choose between, continuing to meet their carbon goals and, and perhaps, having to allocate additional, money that they may not have, that may be coming from, like a food program for children or, some other need in the community. And I think we've got to hold that all together and be aware of that right now in these times. And think about, what's our most efficient path forward to reducing carbon emissions and I think keeping EBCE whole. And are we willing to, risk, losing some of these communities because they have a more competitive option at PG&E that will allow them to meet their carbon goals and stay within their budgets. And so I would just encourage staff, as I know that they're doing, and the board also, to really look at this as a competitiveness question and, really asking ourselves, how do we ensure that we continue to be competitive, that we're offering products that make sense for, our largest customers and ratepayers, and that, are at least, on par with what PG&E is offering in the marketplace. And that's just what I would put out there as a focus that we need to keep in our mind.
Great, thank you, Jane. Monica, and then Cynthia, and then I want to have us decide if we actually want to do a motion today or just have information and talk about this at a later time. Monica?
Yeah, so a lot of what I was going to say. So basically, I concur with Jane on the competitiveness. I also want to thank staff for bringing this back to us. I know it's not an easy topic to bring up, especially with this group, but I think that they're doing the right thing in terms of, you know, they have to have this difficult discussion with us. I had a question for Nick or Ann. The thought came to mind, if the board was willing to accept to offer this special product for Albany and Hayward and Pleasanton, is it conceivable that they could take the full nuclear allocation to get to carbon free, like all of the what EBCE would get, in which case they would basically have a much lower rate?
No, their rate would not be lower. Their rate would be the same as, or at, would be priced at Brilliant 100 or priced at parity with PG&E.
But the cost for you to deliver that product would be much lower.
Well, we would still have to meet the renewables levels. So we're not proposing that these customers would have a lower level of renewable than Bright Choice.
But it could be that, right? If you wanted to make sure you kept it off of any other EBCE product, PCL, you could give it all to Hayward and Albany.
Conceivably, but that's not what staff is recommending. And we're recommending that we would sell the excess beyond that. And in which case, the price would not be lower than Bright Choice, certainly. And it would, and given the relatively small difference between Bright Choice and PG&E to start with, there is some risk premium you need to price into that because, you know, you're having to move some things around and you likely end up selling more of the nuclear just to make sure it doesn't land on anyone else's rate. So then you probably have to buy some amount of incremental small hydro as the year passes. And let's just say it's a very hot year like this. The load is heavier towards the end of the year. You might have to go back to the market to buy some large hydro. So you need to have some premium built in to kind of provide a buffer to make sure that you're at the cost of service.
Okay. So they're not interested in a 50% nuclear product necessarily.
All right, guys, I want to really try and keep us to our time. It's not going to work very well. Cynthia, do you have something quick? And then Ernie, I see your hand up quick as well. Cynthia? You're on mute, Cynthia. Can you unmute Cynthia? Or does she have to do it? Star 9? Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I got it. I would like to suggest a motion.
Right.
And that motion is to oppose the offering of a new product that is at cost parity. Well, the cost parity with PG, I would like to oppose the existing motion that, option 3 that currently includes nuclear power and perhaps EBCE staff could look at other energy and cost scenarios, such as, I don't know if it's possible, for instance, instead of nuclear, since we purchase large, I think we are purchasing large hydro, is it possible to have, instead of the nuclear, large hydro? In other words, substituting large hydro for nuclear power, which, by the way, large hydro is, there's issues with environmental degradation with large hydro, but since we already committed to large hydro, at least for this coming year, maybe we need to, I'd like for us to consider other options minus the nuclear power.
Okay, so I have a motion on the table to oppose the new product for option 3, and staff could look at other energy and cost scenarios to replace any nuclear, but still get to 100% renewable. That's what I'm hearing. Ernie?
I was going to propose a motion 2, not fully formed, similar to Cynthia's. Primarily to oppose the proposed third option, but also to ask that an option of parity price-wise with PG&E is presented with whatever the equivalent greenhouse gas reductions would be for that for consideration by the board. So I don't know if we can square those two motions or what.
Well, I think that you're talking about cost, and Cynthia was talking about wanting to look at other scenarios. I mean, personally, I will say I'm virtually certain staff looked at all scenarios prior to coming to this. I think that we can definitely advise that. I will say that I think my preference, and I'll put this here to see if people agree with this, is that we have the motion to oppose a new product or not oppose a new product, because that's kind of the discussion at this point. We will perhaps have next month that we could talk about other things. I don't know if that's too limiting. If the group feels that it's too limiting, we do have this motion to oppose. I'm going to tell you, I'm personally going to not vote for this motion for reasons, but I'm perfectly fine with it moving forward. And if we have a split decision, we do. I think there's something about local governments being able to choose some of these things. And I don't want to squash that prior to any discussion. So if we're saying don't even discuss it, that doesn't seem to work as well. And then essentially the discussions on nuclear go very local, because then they go to the city councils. So anyway, that's my comment on it. We have a motion. And Ernie, do you feel the need for us to also get the cost into this motion to figure out how you can get cost parity?
Which is what a product with cost parity that does not include nuclear.
Yeah, that's
right. That's what Cynthia has then.
Okay, I second the motion then.
All right. So we have a motion by Cynthia, a second by Ernie. I'd like to call the vote.
Just real quick, what they're saying is go ahead and discuss it, but we suggest you oppose it, right? Not don't even talk about it.
I'm hearing don't talk about it.
No, people can talk about it. I mean, of course they can talk about it, but our recommendation is against including
against the third product. Yes, I agree. That was my understanding, Cynthia, too. We're not trying to tell elected members not to discuss something. We're saying we oppose that proposed third product.
Okay. All right.
Okay, and before I go to roll call vote, just to clarify, Member Landry is motioning to recommend the board oppose new product option 3, which is a nuclear power, and direct staff to review other content and cost scenarios, potentially increasing large hydro options.
That is correct, yeah. Other options outside of nuclear power, correct.
Okay, here we go. We'll go roll call vote. Member Eldred?
Support.
Padilla?
Oppose.
Pacheco?
Support.
Landry?
Support.
Franck?
Oppose.
Setter?
Oppose. Great. Thanks, guys. I will present this to the board on Wednesday. I will also indicate that we had significant discussion around this. And so they will understand kind of that we talked about this for quite a while. I fully expect us to talk about this again next month.
What's okay. The vote tally, please?
3 oppose and 3 support.
Okay, so it's, okay.
Yeah.
So I think technically the motion passes, is that right?
It does not pass.
Oh, it does not pass. Okay.
No, it is equal. It is a null motion.
I will indicate it's a null motion for that reason. And I have some things that I'll also bring up to the board. All right, so I want to put it to this group. We are running late. We have 15 minutes left. We have 2 items, update of the integrated resource planning that we had assumed would take 25 minutes. and an establishment of a rate stabilization GASB 62 fund that we assume would also take 25 minutes. Are there either of those that this group would be willing to just drop from our agenda and not discuss? These will be discussed on Wednesday, or are you willing to stay late and have these discussions occur?
I can also note, this is Stephanie Tannhouse. I'm giving the IRP update. That's not going to be 25 minutes. I can keep it to less than five.
Perfect. That's one of the things I was hoping to hear.
I can stay on a bit longer here.
Okay. So I have one stay on.
I can stay on.
Monica says, yep. Okay, great. We're going to move forward then, and we'll do the update of the integrated resource planning filing. So.
Perfect. All right. So this is Stephanie Tannhouse. I'll be providing this update. I believe I have to share my screen.
Oh, I have it up if you would like me to show it, Stephanie.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful, actually, thanks.
Okay, no problem.
So those of you remember, in July, we presented the results of the analysis that we'd done for the integrated resource plan. Stephanie, we can move to the slide, thank you. So that was part of phase one. So that was the work that we had done to achieve what we needed to do to meet the CPUC's requirements for the IRP filing. So they had a number of different documents that were required. We wrote a long narrative explaining that analysis that has been submitted to the CPUC. So phase one of EBCE's IRP work is now complete. We're on to phase two, which is looking more inward at EBCE's own organizational goals and doing an analysis around a more ambitious greenhouse gas target than what the CPUC requirements included. The idea is that analysis will inform future procurement recommendations for our organization. We can move to the next slide. This should also hopefully look familiar. This is just what those CPUC requirements looked like. So this cycle, there were two scenarios required that represented two different statewide greenhouse gas targets for the electric sector. Those were allocated out based on each load serving entity's load share. So our greenhouse gas emissions targets by 2030 were a little over 1.2 million metric tons, and then a little less than 1 million metric tons in the lower greenhouse gas scenario. The CPUC, the 46, the higher greenhouse gas scenario, was sort of their base case. That's what they call their reference system plan. But then they also required this additional, somewhat lower scenario to be submitted. We can move to the next slide. So these were the final portfolios that were submitted to the CPUC for each of those scenarios. The makeup of, the resources that make up those portfolios look very similar. So the pie charts on the top are the portion of each resource type that meets EBCE's overall portfolio in 2030. Left is higher greenhouse gas scenario, right is the lower one. And then the bar charts show an annual representation of those different resource types. And in that lower greenhouse gas scenario, you can see that the long-term procurement of resources is higher. So we're filling more of our need with cleaner resources. So the scale on that axis is a little bit different. We've also put in the costs that were calculated. So these are the total costs of both of these portfolios levelized over the 10-year horizon. And I think the takeaway here is that for these two scenarios, the lower greenhouse gas scenario is only marginally more expensive over the time horizon. So, you know, that is part of why we're interested in looking at a more aggressive target and, you know, looking and comparing the costs of achieving that. Move to the next slide. So next steps, like I mentioned at the beginning, we are in the process of that phase two analysis of a more ambitious decarbonization goal. We will be presenting the results of that analysis, hopefully at the next meeting, but definitely in the next couple months, and can have another discussion then and kind of compare across all of the different IRP portfolios that we've looked at this point. Moving forward, the board will review and approve our next round of procurement based on that range of decarbonization pathways that we're evaluating.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you. Do we
have any public comment on this item, Stephanie?
I do have one speaker, Blair Beekman, and for the record, that was 4 minutes and 58 seconds.
Just made it. And because we are time constrained, I'd like to hold the rest of the public comments to 2 minutes, please. Blair?
Thank you. Okay, and I actually have Tom Kelly as well signed up, and I'm unmuting Tom.
Okay. Tom.
Yes, Tom. Thank you. Yep. I'm looking forward to reading the entire IRP, but I'd like to point out that the word nuclear appears 12 times in that document, and each time it essentially says that there will be no nuclear in EBCE's power mix. So I got to say, what this to me is that EBCE did understand at one point that when the board voted not to include nuclear, it intended to be a permanent no, not one that the EBC would revisit annually. The next thing I'd like to say is that it is a way of helping Annie and Nick answer the question that Anne Olivia asked. Yes, nuclear will show up in the power content label. It shows up now in the 2019 power content label. We have actually 1% nuclear in our Bright Choice mix, which is the result of purchasing more than 33% of our power from an asset controlling supplier, there are actually three of them, who have things like natural gas and nuclear in their power mix. So, you know, I find this very troublesome that we try to set out future for this agency only to have the staff figure out ways to work around it. And, you know, it always seems to come down to cost, but let me remind you that the cost of power has nothing to do with the retail rates of PG&E charges its customers. We pay a wholesale price for power that has no connection to PG&E whatsoever. And that is why this year, we're projecting a 33% larger net reserve than was anticipated at the beginning of the year. We're going to put $20 million more in the bank for a total of $80 million, even in the face of the pandemic and all the other issues that we face. So I don't know. Does it bother anybody else? Because it bothers me. Thank you.
It bothers me.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Blair?
Hi. Thank you.
I think he got muted again.
Hello. I got muted. I'm back. I'm back. Great. Thank you. To speak to the items of procurement, it was spoken by the staff person on the last item. I felt she really tried to set out that, you know, by this time next year, you know, there is ways that the EBC can work to address the nuclear question. you know, and it was nice to hear that in her voice and what she was trying to say. And I trust her in her intentions. You know, you've got a month now to work on these issues and really set a good course for this next year. And we have to start working now. And that has to be, I think, really urgently spoken about in the remaining public meetings this month, that we have to be conversational. And I don't know what that all entails. I'm not that knowledgeable, but I can definitely see that that is what is needed for this subject right now. And I do have that much of a sense and understanding. So good luck in what we can do. The previous speaker just offered a lot of nice things. And you know, that's obviously the thinking and direction we have to have for how we work with community energy at the local level. Thank you.
Thank you, Blair. Do we have any more speakers?
There are no other speakers.
Great. Ernie and then Monica.
My hand was actually raised from earlier, but I will take this opportunity that I appreciate Tom Kelly's remarks. I agree, taking a position and then it being brought in through a side door, 4 months later, it doesn't feel right. So I appreciate the public speaker's remarks. Great.
Monica?
Yeah, so two questions, or maybe one question and a comment. To the question about, or to the point about nuclear and the, I guess the statement about staff sneaking it in, made by Ernie, and I didn't really hear that from the speaker, but can you explain why nuclear wasn't included in the IRP? Was it an actual product that you could include? I mean, my understanding was because PG&E had not made the allocations, and still has not made an allocation beyond 2020, that is the 2021 and beyond is still to be decided by the CPUC, there really was no way for you to include nuclear in your IRP.
So we did base the portfolios initially off of portfolios that the CPUC developed, which include all resources that are currently online, and then a projection of future resources needed to make different greenhouse gas goals. So there was an option for the early years of the analysis to include nuclear, and we chose not to based on, you know, our understanding of what would be kind of more reflective of the, you know, EBCE's direction. But I guess I'll also say that the IRP is a long-term document, planning tool, really, and certainly in the longer term horizon, nuclear becomes, you know, much less of a issue. You know, it's not going to become a prominent resource, and as we look towards meeting a 2030 greenhouse gas target, so there was no circumstance where it would have been included in the 2030 portfolio.
But even in the near term one, I guess I'm not clear how, if you can't just buy nuclear, there's nobody selling nuclear except for PG&E, who would only give it to us through an allocation. How would you find nuclear? How would you go out and procure? So that's my first, that's my, the second. And then my other question is related to your graphs on slide 4, where you show a big slice of the portfolio being met with storage. Can you just explain a little bit what that storage would look like, and then what is the fuel source for the storage?
Sure. So yeah, you're right. We can't, you know, we wouldn't be contracting for nuclear if PG&E were to allocate nuclear to us, then that would, you know, that could be included in these portfolios. But you are right that we did not include any assumptions of allocations because of the uncertainty around those. The storage here, the CPUC portfolios that we submitted are based off of the portfolio, the statewide CPUC portfolios that came from their modeling. And so for their modeling, they model solar and storage separately. The assumption is that the solar and storage will almost certainly be paired especially in the near term, as long as that there's an ITC benefit. So storage is, even if they aren't like paired or co-located in the same physical resource, storage will charge when prices are low, which tends to be the middle of the day when we have a lot of excess solar gen.
This is all kind of hybrid or located with PV.
That's what we assume. And then certainly in the phase two, like EVCE specific modeling that we're doing now, essentially any solar that is being procured also has storage. And then there are incremental benefits to standalone storage.
All right, thank you. Good job, though. Thanks for the presentation.
Great, thank you. Ernie, your hand is still up. Did you have something else, or is it leftover?
Yeah, no. I would just like to clarify that I wasn't stating or implying that staff is responsible for us considering this. This was brought by my council member, but I believe the appropriate response from staff, the CAC, and the board is this issue of proffer of diable allocation has already been addressed. At least for this fiscal year. It was not that staff is trying to sneak something in. I fully understand how this got onto everybody's table.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on this? This is informational for us. Seeing none, I'm gonna move us on to item C7, which is establishment of a rate stabilization GASB 62 fund. Is that Howard? Who's presenting this one? Jason?
Hi. Yes, Jason Bartlett here, finance manager for East Bay Community Energy. thank you very much for everyone's time. I'll be brief. So what we're proposing is a budget stabilization fund. I know that it might have said rate stabilization fund before. We've changed the name because we think this more accurately reflects its true intentions. And the stabilization of rates, though, is a strong result of this. But to walk you through it, basically, Government Accounting Standard Board's ruling 62 allows government agencies such as ours, enterprises that collect money through ratepayers, to defer the accrual of revenue in strong years in order to be realized in more lean times. This can help stabilize budgets, which is how we kind of got to the name. It can also stabilize rates, because if you're trying to make up for a budget shortfall in the middle of a year, you might have to raise rates. This allows from rates collected earlier to then be accrued in the time period. So any deferred rates or any deferred revenues will reduce the net position in the year it's deferred, but increase the net position in the year that it's realized. So this is fundamentally an accounting treatment. It's not a cash management approach as it is with our reserve fund, with our reserve accounts. Our reserve accounts are already realized revenues that have converted to cash that we then use for our various purposes as needed. But this would, instead of dealing with the realized cash and converted cash, this deals with the revenues as they are on the books. And basically, so this spreads the benefit from a strong financial period into a potentially weaker one. Next slide, please. Great. So this stabilizes short-term variations and helps preserve a positive net position in these areas. Maintaining a positive net position has many advantages. One, as I mentioned earlier, it can stabilize the rates. We don't need to change the rates in order to cover any potential budget shortfalls. It also ensures that the money that we have promised for LDDP is available and can be recognized year over year, especially when we're like this year, when we're carrying last year's charges onto this year's budget. This will help stabilize that with our financial statements. It also you know, sends a signal to counterparties and to other interested financial people that, you know, we're practicing good management, particularly with managing cost variations. And again, because the difference is strong in earning, because the difference is in strong earning periods, which have revenues above what's already approved on the budget, this will not affect cash reserve allocations, and so or any mechanism that we use to fund our cash reserves. So next slide, please. So to kind of nail down how it's going to work, or how we're proposing that it works for this year, is that you know, we are anticipating the current, the audit is not yet finished, but these are some preliminary numbers. Approximately around $22.5 million above what our budget net position was going to be, which was $60 million. So that's a good chunk. So what we want to do is we want to take about 12.7 of that million and defer that into a future time period this year. And that would reduce the net position that we'll see on our audit by that amount, lowering it from about 22 and a half million surplus to about 10 million surplus. But it will also help give us some extra revenues that we, you know, if, as we know, we're probably going to need this year given the tight budget that we're looking at. And please note again that these numbers are subject to change with audit confirmation. Next slide, please. And so much of this advantage is we're targeting specifically to local development. The $4.4 million of expenses that were not realized last year, that weren't spent last year, are going to be spent this year. And that's going to impact our financial statements. So this will help. This $4.4 million will come from these deferred revenues and stabilize our budget in that capacity. Now the board approved that these funds be carried over into this year. And this is really the proper financial mechanism to ensure that the board and the people's intentions are met. And while ensuring EVCE's budget stability as well. Because what this does is that this allows, it really just aligns the revenues and the expenses to the same time period. We collected those revenues for that $4.4 million last year. We should not be collecting it again this year. So this even though we're spending that money this year. So this aligns for those two things to be in place. And so staff is recommending that you know, we meet this $4.4 million demand along with more. We're proposing $12.7 million to equal the total local development budget. This can then be realized and stabilize the budget in future periods. And so that's the entirety of my presentation. Hopefully I beat 4 minutes, 58 seconds, but that's the record.
I don't know if that's the record, but thank you, Jason. I know I personally have a question for you on this. When it goes into a GASB, when it goes into this accounting fund, it is cash that it actually is sitting somewhere. Where does that cash go? And will EBCE be investing it? And if so, are there investment policies for this type of effort, as in terms of a certain percent go in one type of product and you can't go over a certain percent in another type of product? Will that be part, is that just in what we have now? Because I don't know that, yeah, I've ever seen that here.
Yeah, it would definitely, you're right in that, in that there is this money on the books. But not all of it has converted to cash, so we don't actually have it in cash as of yet. It needs to go through the accounts receivable process or other realizations, accounting realizations, as they call it. But so it's not exactly as cash yet. But if it when it does convert to cash, it would be managed by all the cash management policies that we have. It would sit in an account. It is not allowed to be spent because it isn't realized until we apply it to the local development expenses that we're promising.
I would just add into this is a pretty important clarification, Mary, is this is a revenue deferral fund. It's not a cash fund. So I think you had noted this does not impact our cash reserves in any way. This is purely an accounting treat. So all of the cash, irrespective of this, treats the exact same way. So this has no impact to that. So we'll put the same amount of money into reserve funds, which is a cash-based policy. This is a revenue-based policy. So this impacts your income statement, but not your cash flow statement or your balance sheet.
Yeah, and it's sometimes hard for me to follow with some of the accounting, even though I understand what you're talking about.
This is a common mistake, so yeah, I mean.
But
it is.
You know, at some point, what I understand, there's money. We allocated, let's say, $100 million. I'm just making up numbers. $100 million in our budget. We have $12 million more in our budget than we expected. We're going to defer that $12 million in our accounting till next year. But the fact that it came in, you know, it's revenue. At some point, it might not have come in until December or November, but that's a lot of money at one point. So where does it go before you take it out of that 62 account and start spending it again, is my point. Because it appears that it's going to be millions, and I'm just wondering how it's invested.
And just to be clear, this is cash that we would otherwise operate with. So if we didn't bring forth any revenue deferral fund, your question is still a valid question. And we're going to do the exact same thing. So it'll sit in our accounts for certain discretionary funds, and we'll put certain cash away in our reserves in accordance with our reserve policy. So again, this action for creation of a revenue deferral fund has no impact on what you just asked, which is how do we manage that cash? The cash is going to come in, it's going to get collected in our accounts, and we're going to put certain amounts into a reserve fund, and certain amounts are in our accounts to, you know, continue to pay our energy expenses and things like that for working capital.
Okay, thank you. I saw Monica's hand, it was up, and I think Ernie, your hand was up as well. So Monica?
And my hand was up also.
I'm sorry, Cynthia. I thank you for reminding me. So Monica, Ernie, Cynthia.
Yeah, so if the intent is to put the money, is to defer future revenues to fund the LBD or the local business development program, if for some reason those future revenues don't materialize, say you have a really bad supply cost year, prices skyrocket, you're not hedged, and therefore you don't actually realize the surplus that you anticipate, what happens to funding of those programs?
So I can field this. This is money that is already, it's on the books, but it's not converted to cash. So it's really not dependent on current market prices at all. It's just dependent upon when the ratepayers pay us, essentially.
So, but if it's to fund potentially
just
programs.
One quick clarification on that. This is for the 2019-2020 fiscal period. So it's already passed with the revenue. Right. So this isn't a future act. This is prior revenues and deferring.
Okay. I thought I saw on one of the slides it would be for a future funding.
We would be deferring the revenue from a past period into a future period. So, when we will lower our revenues in our income statement for the 2019-2020 timeframe, which we're sorting up financial statements on right now. So that would go down. And then in a future timeframe, we would increase revenues to sort of match, you know, the expenses that basically we're deferring.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Is there a motion that's being asked for on this, by the way? It's just info?
No, this is informational for us. I think it's a motion for the board. I chose to make it informational for us at this point. Cynthia.
Yes. I'd like to clarify whether your deferral does that affect the amount of money we're allocating into the local, you know, business development fund?
No, it does not in any way. If anything, this part of the accounting treatment here is in order to support some of those expenses.
Say that, you trailed off a little bit. Say that last sentence again.
Part of the reason that we're doing this is actually because it helps to support some of the expenses that we've deferred from last year into this period. So no, it doesn't change the budget for the local development fund.
Okay, you're still allocating the same amount, but you're carrying it forward to the following year?
No, we're not even saying we're carrying it forward. It's this current fiscal year, so the 2020-2021 timeframe. You know, the local development budget is unchanged from what was recently approved from this June earlier this year. So this is purely an accounting treatment, actually to sort of help stabilize budget the amount of that local development to potentially help support this fiscal year spend on.
All right.
So I see no other hands raised. Appreciate you guys presenting to us. I think accounting and what happens in accounting can be difficult, but I definitely wanted the CAC to be aware of it, which is why it's an informational item for us. Appreciate your time. The last item that we have is member or staff announcements, including requests to place items on future agendas. Do we have any?
Yes, we do. I don't know if we're completed with the discussion on C5. I don't know if it's action or informational for us, but I'd like to see more discussion on that and especially what the staff brings back.
Got it. I'll have that next month, Cynthia.
And I'd like to see I'd like to see a copy of the motion that was actually passed by the JPA board relative to the split vote.
So I'm assuming that that's in the minutes that should be online from the last board meeting.
No, that would be a couple of meetings ago.
Yeah, I'm sure they're online.
Okay, thank you. And I can also just send those to you. Cynthia, I'll send those after the meeting.
Thank you, Stephanie. Appreciate that. Anybody else? Nope. Well, I appreciate everybody's time. We got through those last items fast. We're only a little bit late, and so I will call the meeting. We are adjourned to Monday, October 19th. Still doing Zoom, near as I know. So, which also allows people to be in many different locations, which it's not bad. It's not bad for that. I kind of like these Zoom things, even though I also like seeing people in person. So. All right, with that, call it closed. Thank you all.
Bye, have a great evening.
Are the meetings now always at 6 o'clock?
I'm going to send out information. This seemed to work, and if it works for the rest of the committee, then we'll just go ahead and shift the meetings to 6 p.m. So I'll send out an email so we can get formal buy-in or comments regarding that.
All right, thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you, bye all.
Bye.